what was it you told me at dinner? Would you repeat it about someone saying you were not qualified to lecture on Buddhism because you were a Buddhist and therefore had not...
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, I have a great grievance here. So yes. I'll gladly repeat myself.
Will you repeat
yes,
it?
I'm still feeling really quite indignant about it. This happened some years ago. There was a publisher in Finland, and the Finns, you probably know, are great readers of books. They've got the second biggest bookshop in the whole world. Foyles being the biggest. Hmm. Oh, yes.
The long readers.
Great readers. So they're always publishing not only books in Finnish, but translations of books from all other languages. They've probably got some of yours, I imagine. But anyway, they were wanting a book on Buddhism. A big publisher in Helsinki was wanting a book on Buddhism. So a friend of mine sent along to this publisher my own book, The Three Jewels. And it was considered, and it was rejected, because the publisher said, we don't want to publish a book on Buddhism by a Buddhist, because it won't be objective.
Yes.
So they published something by Alan Watts instead. Yes.
That's the attitude, mm. Yes. You find that in the universities.
The university professors, they are awful.
They are.
They think that they know all about Buddhism. But they well, may not be Buddhists, well, one or two of them nowadays are, which is an improvement. But they're not Buddhists, they've no sympathy with Buddhism. In some cases, they don't even believe in the possibility of spiritual experience. But they, at the same time, believe that they are the authorities on Buddhism. And publishers accept them as authorities on Buddhism. And they are supposed to have the last word on the subject, not me. I've only been studying it and trying to practice it for 40 years. I'm a miserable Buddhist. You see, I'm not an authority on Buddhism at all. They wouldn't want to publish some of them, my books. So, of course, I feel rather annoyed about it, and rightly annoyed, and I hope to get back at them in some way.
This is the academic attitude. It has to be history of art. It mustn't be a painting in any village in France. At least they kneel and weep before the effigy of Christ or some bad little piece of cheap china that is the Virgin Mary or in Ireland St. Bridget or whoever it is. At least they recognize that this is a divine presence, but that won't do for the universities. It has to be objective, as you say. History of art.
Yes, I wrote some time ago that it again was in the 50s, I forget where, that it's much better to worship a tree than not to worship anything and just to be a scientist.
Much
better to worship a tree or to be an animist. I wrote an essay in those days called A Defense of Animism. I'm afraid I lost it, and no one would publish it, you see, and it's been lost. A Defense of Animism.
Of course.
Yes, because sometimes you read books about Buddhism, especially Burmese Buddhism, and they say, well, how terrible, the Burmese have mixed up, you know, this beautiful, pure, spiritual Buddhism with animism. I think it's a thoroughly good thing. I'm all in favour of animism. I wish we had more of it in Britain.
I wish we had, too.
More sacred wells and,
well, all over India, practically anything you stumble over may be sacred. An anthill may have marigold wreaths on it because it is a sacred anthill to the goddess, or a tree, or, you know. Yes.
Well, if this had been India, we'd be sitting here wearing marigold garlands.
That would be nice.
Because at the beginning, of every meeting in India, certainly Buddhist meetings, they load you with marigold garlands. Now, I'm not sort of hinting anything to Padmaraj. Well, we've got these credentials. But this is their attitude, this is their spirit. Huh?
We've got some credentials.
Yes. Well, when I say we've got them, we're not going to be allowed to take them away, I expect. They've already got to go to do duty tomorrow. But in India, yes, this is the sort of attitude. And they hang garlands and marigolds on sacred trees. But I mean, I haven't
and
seen
the
them around
sacred
anthills. I mean,
there are sacred anthills. This is true. It's the
goddess.
Well,
I quite believe it because in India they'll make anything sacred.
Well, you often get Nagas living in anthills. Yes. They go there for the water. But also anything.
So we've lost this.
We've lost it.
And we don't know that we've lost it.
What else could a tree be but sacred? Yes. I mean, it's. I was thinking as we came along. I was saying to Nick, looking at the way trees are clipped and cropped in England, and thinking how in India, you've, I'm sure, seen this 1,000 times, you will see a temple and an old tree, very ancient tree coming through the temple wall and the wall broken down. Well, why is this? Yeah. Because the tree is sacred. A wall is something you make, and you, when the tree gets too big, you take away the wall. You don't lock the tree.
Prop the tree up, or you build a little wall under it to support the branches.
But you don't destroy a sacred tree. Particularly
I'm afraid they're beginning to do that even in India.
Well, that's a secular world.
I wrote a poem about this when I was in Kalimpong. I was very upset to see all the trees being cut down in the neighboring forest for charcoal. And they were just burning the forest
India's being destroyed.
I'm afraid it is. Yes. They've lost, I think, 3/5 of their forests already since independence.
But after all, the diaspora perhaps will send this knowledge to the West, and it's interesting that your Buddhist missionaries are now going from England back to Bombay, where I'm sure they're badly needed.
Yes, well, I'm afraid they're badly needed everywhere, but we do our little bit.